Hello and welcome back to another episode of Spilling the Tea. I hope everyone is doing really, really well and you didn't mind me taking that little break for the last couple of weeks. Sometimes when I'm like so busy in work, I just can't even like think, let alone come in and record a podcast. but we're back in business today. I'm always a bit rusty to start, so I come back after like the first day of school. But I'm glad to be back. And this week's episode, my God, I was only just saying to Dan, my lovely producer, that this is probably one of the most requested episodes that I've got, even from season one when I used to put up like Q&As and be like, what would you like me to cover? And that is basically fertility and pregnancy and mainly like in the run up to getting pregnant, like things that we should be doing. And I think I've kind of like put off doing the episode for a few reasons. And really the main one, and this is something I really, really want to get across today for this episode, is there's a lot of noise sometimes around fertility and it can be really, really overwhelming of things like you should be doing. So for example, like one of my really good friends, I think she was like 7 or 8 months pregnant and like nearly there. Like it wasn't like, you know, I'm talking about what she'd been doing 3 months before and stuff today, but she was nearly there. And she saw something on Instagram of someone being like, you have to take these omega-3 supplements and like it's so important for baby's brain development and it can cause XYZ if you're not taking them. And like she had a meltdown. She was like, oh my God, my baby is going to be brain dead. Like, and that is extreme. Like that wasn't true. Like, yes, there's, you know, things that we can take to help support our system and, you know, things like that. But I think I don't want to add to kind of the fear mongering is probably the wrong word, but just the stress and the checklist and things you have to be doing. Like, you know, I think I've had so many clients and they kind of forget what it's all about. Like, you know, if you're planning on, you know, talking about fertility, you're talking about getting pregnant, you're making a baby. Like you and your partner are at that point where you want to create another human. Like that is just the most amazing position to be in. It's so exciting. And I think that kind of excitement sometimes gets pushed out because it's like, oh my God, he was in the pub like 3 nights last week and I'm ovulating tomorrow. And like, I've seen it so much with clients. So I think part of that was my reluctance to do this because I don't want to add to that noise of, oh my God, like I'm wearing XYZ tan that isn't, you know, not, like completely natural. So I kind of want to say straight away, everything I say today, take with a pinch of salt. And that's not to say like, obviously, you know, I'm talking about science kind of things today, but like at the same time, like our moms did nothing. Like, and we're grand, aren't we? Like, I think we are. Like most of us are anyway, but like, you know, us 80s, 90s babies, like, you know, our parents got pregnant and there was no scans, no like Harmony tests to check for like DNA damage, and there was no checking the sex of the baby, and they certainly weren't taking prenatal supplements. And fair enough, there's less environmental toxins and, you know, their food was much better back then and it was a different world, like, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s. But I'm just saying that like this is what your body is designed to do. Not that you have to do it. It's not me saying if you're a female or if you're a male you have to reproduce, but our body knows how to do this. And all we can do, like anything else, is just give it a few little tips, a few little helpers along to make the process a little bit easier. So let's get into the episode. Talking about fertility tips for her, and we're going to have for him in a couple of weeks' time. But let's get into the episode. I'm so excited to announce Ethos as our sponsor for season 2. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably heard of them already. Ethos are an Irish CBD and hemp brand set up by couple Amy and Fergus, who are both extremely lovely people, may I add. They have a range of CBD oils and hemp teas, and they have blended organically grown hemp from Wicklow with adaptogenic herbs, which I'm obsessed with, and botanical extract to support a range of well-being needs. Their rest range supports better quality sleep, and their balance range helps to reduce daily stress and anxiety, and their active oil and repair balm are focused on reducing inflammation and aiding recovery from workouts. I recommend adding their supplements to your routine if you're looking to improve your sleep quality, stress levels, or reduce inflammation. Their teas are also a really, really nice addition to your bedtime or daily routine. You'll find Ethos at most pharmacies or health food stores, and they also kindly gifted me 20% off discount code for all of you lovely listeners. If you head to the link in my show notes below, you can subscribe there and it'll be sent straight to your inbox in addition to a gorgeous bedtime yoga track to help you de-stress and unwind before bed. If you're curious about trying the products, check the digital consultation tool on their website to help you select the right product for your needs, or listen to episode 1 of season 2 where I speak to Amy about the science and benefits of CBD. So, the first thing I would say is it takes 12 months to make a baby, not 9. And the reason why is that egg and sperm take about 3 months to fully develop. So what you're doing over those 3 months is really, really important. So this is key. Like if you're like, okay, we're going to start trying in March. Let's say, you know, it's from January onwards that you should be really thinking, okay, all these little tips are going to go through today so you can ensure that your egg and sperm are as healthy as possible. So it takes 3 months or 12 months to make a baby, not 3 months. And there's certain things that I would recommend doing for those 3 months. Number one is actually getting bloods done. And I think, like, again, in Ireland, we're kind of in the mindset of, like, if there's nothing wrong, like, I don't need to look into that. Like, I know my sister-in-law, for example, is from Israel. And they just get, like, yearly bloods done. The way, like, you know, we have to go and do our NCT for our car. It's like a yearly NCT. Because she's like, yeah, obviously, like, why would you wait until you're feeling sick or wait until issues come up to go and get bloods? And she's like, you know, you can prevent that from happening. Like, it makes so much sense. Whereas us, like, we're dragging ourselves into the GP. We're like, yeah, I fainted in work, or like, oh my God, I've lost my period, or like, I can't sleep, or like, we kind of go when we have these really, really extreme issues. So with fertility, I always say, like, there's within range and there's normal. You've heard me mention this so many times if you follow me on the podcast. And there is within range and then there's optimal ranges. So we know so much about fertility now that this is something you can control. Like, we don't know if it's going to take you 6 months or a year or 4 months or whatever it is, but we know you can make sure your bloods are optimal. So 3 months before, because it gives you that much time to kind of, you know, if something comes back low, you have that 3 months then to rectify it, and your egg quality won't be deficient in iron, or won't be deficient in your B12 or things like that. So I have a blood testing highlight on my Instagram, and I'd go recommend taking a little screenshot, bring it into your GP. For once, you know, I've had millions of clients who were with their doctor, and the doctor are like, you know, do you want to get pregnant? And they're like, no. And they'd be like, well, what's the problem? Like, why do you want to get these done? So for once, you can be like, yes, yes, I do. I do want to get pregnant. And hopefully they'll be, you know, very forthcoming to doing the bloods that you're requesting. To give you a little perspective on this and what I mean by like optimal ranges. So B12 is one that I would kind of use quite a lot as an example. And low B12 is about 180, okay? But high B12 is about 800, give or take. So I have a client told, like, yeah, you're within range. And I'm like, are you 220 or are you 790? Like, what is it? What's within range? And B12 is really, really important for ovulation, for hormone detoxification. Like, it's really, really important vitamin that's needed for fertility. So that's just a really good example for that. And I don't want my clients any less than 500 for B12. The other one is your iron. So low iron, I learned it as low iron is 8 or 9. I've seen some bloods say low iron is 11 and some low iron is 7. So, you know, anywhere less than, say, 10 would be considered low. And high iron is around 35. Now, you don't want high iron either, but imagine your iron is 15. That's not going to be flagged in a blood test. That's going to be, you're going to be told, yeah, you're within range. But iron is really, really important for pregnancy as well. So, like, if you're borderline anemic when you're getting pregnant, chances are you might be anemic then when you actually get pregnant, because you require, like, think about, you're actually growing another human. And what is that human filled with? Blood. And what is blood made of? Your iron. So low iron and anemia is really, really common in pregnancy. So that's another little thing to think about. The other thing that I find super important for fertility is thyroid. I'm trying to think if I mentioned this in other episodes you can go back and listen to, but basically the way I always think about thyroid is it's almost like your control center in your body. So if your body's not happy with something that you're doing, like, it's kind of your way of getting attention. This is just my way of describing it, you know, me and my analogy. So for example, with thyroid, you'll sleep for 8 hours, 9 hours, and you'll get up knackered, like still wrecked. You will be in a calorie deficit and you still find it really hard to lose weight. You're freezing cold all the time, like your feet and your hands are freezing, even though like you're cuddled up on the couch, but like, you know, your slippers on, your dressing gown and a blanket, like you're still cold. So these kind of things where it's like as if it should be X because you're doing a certain thing, but it's Y. Your body just is not responding the way it should be. So thyroid is one of the most important hormones for pregnancy, because when you get pregnant, and even when you're trying to conceive as well, so when you're trying to conceive, thyroid issues can actually cause an issue with progesterone, which we're going to talk about today. And progesterone is actually the hormone that maintains pregnancy. So if you're chronically low in progesterone, so if you're having really, really bad symptoms of like PMS, so premenstrual syndrome, which is anything from sore boobs to cramps to headaches to breakouts to sugar cravings, low mood, basically, girls, all those annoying things that we get in the run-up to our period, it's always linked with usually low progesterone. And imagine your thyroid is a little bit off and it's depleting your progesterone even further, even before you get pregnant. Then when you get pregnant, for those first 12 weeks, the baby growing can't actually make its thyroid hormones, so it needs yours. It needs to borrow yours. Now, an underactive thyroid is the biggest risk here for pregnancy. And the kind of issue with this is, so this thing called your TSH, just call your thyroid stimulating hormone. And it's kind of like looking at how hard your thyroid is working. So in underactive thyroids, your thyroid hormones are normally high, right? So what I mean by this, and it's kind of confusing because you'll think it'd be the other way around. So if your thyroid is underactive, your TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, would be around maybe above 4. Whereas when it's overactive, it's usually about like, it could be like, you know, 0.8. So it's kind of the other end of the scale. So thyroid hormones are high. And what that's kind of saying is, it's not saying you've too much thyroid hormones, it's saying that your thyroid is overworked. So it's doing too much time, it's putting too much effort in to try and make the smallest amount of hormones because you don't have enough. Now, the biggest problem with fertility and thyroid, I just mentioned there, high thyroid from your doctor's perspective, 99% of the time, they're not going to blink an eyelid until it's above 4.4. But for pregnancy and for fertility, we do not want that higher than 2.5. So this is something you can start looking at yourself. Always ask for a copy of your bloods. Like, you don't need to be qualified to read them. Like, you know, there's ranges normally beside it. And if you're concerned about something, you can go back to your doctor and question them on it. But I had a really, upsetting, or just kind of more, actually, maybe not even upsetting, more eye-opening is the best term I would use myself with my thyroid last year. So I got bloods done last August and my TSH was 3.8. So not ideal. Now, stress hugely impacts thyroid and I was very, very stressed at the time. I had missed a period. It was just kind of good timing that like I'd bloods booked in when my cycle was all over the place. So I was like, grand. Got my bloods done, went to the doctor almost just to see her opinion. And again, I'm not saying any bad about doctors, like they're so well trained, they're just trained differently to the way I would look at things. So I was in with her and I was like, okay, I'm just a little bit concerned about my TSH, it's 3.8 from a fertility perspective. And she's like, oh yeah, of course, and how long have you been trying to get pregnant? And I was like, no, I'm not trying to get pregnant, but like, you know, probably next year some stage, like I'm just trying to be proactive. And she was like, oh well, if you're not trying to get pregnant, like what's the issue? And kind of then, you know, agreed with me initially that yes, it's too high. And then my back being like, well, there's no problem. And I can understand, like, at that point, I hadn't started trying to get pregnant. Like, there was no like issue there. But there's so much research to say that if your TSH is high, it does increase your risk of miscarriage. And I said that to her and she was like, oh, to be honest, it's something that we wouldn't really look into until you've had 3 miscarriages. And when I say my jaw dropped, I just was like, okay, like completely taken aback. And she was very blasé about it. I'm just like, yeah, like obviously like that's not an issue. Like we're kind of more condescending me. Like normally we wouldn't even think about this until you've had at least 3 miscarriages. And like, I was so challenged by her and I was like, oh my God. And I know what I'm talking about. Like it was such a good eye opener to see what my clients go through. And it can be really, really intimidating when you're in the GP's office and they're kind of questioning, you know, what you're saying. And especially like if you've come to see me and I'm giving you a lot of information. And again, all due respect to the doctors, they're just trained differently. Sometimes I might know more about things than they would. Like I had someone last week and their doctor wouldn't check their FSH and LH with their 2 like basic ovulation hormones because she was told they're only linked with menopause, which is just so inaccurate. Like it's just completely inaccurate. So I got such a taster of what it's like to go in and just be completely like, you know, a bit shell-shocked. But anyway, sorry, that's a completely, you know, side note. But thyroid is super important. And that was a very, very long way of saying, go and get your bloods done. While we are on the topic of bloods, one other one I want to talk about is actually progesterone. So I don't think we all need to get progesterone done. I think if you're struggling to get pregnant, if you've had a miscarriage, if, you know, you're having fertility issues, you know, then definitely the progesterone check might be best. But if you're kind of just someone being like, okay, we talked about it, we're going to start trying soon, what should I do? I don't think we need to go that extreme just yet. Progesterone, you'll often hear, is a day 21 progesterone test. No. The only time a day 21 progesterone test is accurate is if you have a 28-day cycle, because what it should be called is a week after ovulation progesterone test, because progesterone peaks a week after ovulation. So I know, for example, my boobs sometimes will be sore on day 21. And it's like as if your body's meant to have loads of progesterone that day, but it doesn't have enough. So you kind of get like symptoms of like PMS, and then it might be fine for a couple of days, and then maybe PMS kicks in again like a few days before. And I know a lot of you listening be like, oh my God, the exact same thing happens to me. So, you know, it could be a week before and then it kind of calms down and then it flares up again. So progesterone is always a week after you ovulate. So this is the problem. Imagine you ovulated on day 20 every month, and you're going in for a day 21 progesterone test. There's not going to be enough there. Like, it's a completely wrong day. You need to go in at that point then and say like the day 27 of your cycle. So normally when people are going for the progesterone test, they might be, well, I hope they are like aware of their cycle and the day they're ovulating. So if you know your cycle, if you're like, no, I have a 35-day cycle, I know I ovulate every month on day 21, you'd be going in then day 28 to get your progesterone checked. And that's something you have to like be really stern with your doctor. For some reason, like, they just don't understand, some of them, not all of them, obviously. But I've had a lot of people who like would email me after and be like, I had an argument about the progesterone, like, as I thought. So it's really, really important, because there's just no point getting it done on the wrong day. Last thing actually about progesterone, again, ask for a copy of your bloods. I would normally think or indicate that if the level is above 30, that's a sign of ovulation. And the goal is, especially on day 21, like, you'd want your progesterone at least 40, like 40 will be optimal, if not higher. And I've mentioned it earlier on, but progesterone is one of the most important hormones at the start of pregnancy, because it maintains pregnancy. And the other thing I work with my clients kind of in the 3 months before is working on their hormones, working on their periods. Like, if you have horrific periods, if, you know, they're really, really painful, if you're getting menstrual migraines, all the kind of, again, annoying symptoms of PMS, that's usually a sign of lack of progesterone. And what I actually kind of find like quite upsetting about all of this is I've seen so many women who have suffered with their hormones their entire life, and now they're struggling to get pregnant. And the root cause has always been low progesterone. So they've had low progesterone with the PMS, and now they've low progesterone and they can't maintain pregnancies. They might be either like having early miscarriages is really, really common here, all linked back in progesterone. And I'm like, why are we not taught this in school? I know that's like literally my mantra, and probably be like on my on my tombstone when I die, like, AOK nutrition, why are we not taught this in school? But like, imagine understanding this from such a young age, that like, you know, progesterone is so important for fertility, like signs of PMS, low progesterone, and just understanding that link. Like, you know, people will be kind of way more likely to address these issues even before trying to get pregnant. So going back to progesterone again, that is why it's so important, and this is why we love our progesterone. Little side note in relation to the lads. So we will be doing an episode in a couple of weeks' time on fertility for him. If you're kind of like, I can't wait for a couple of weeks, because it probably about maybe like 3 or 4 weeks. Literally only today, a podcast episode got released with Dan, our lovely producer, Primal Podcast. I'm actually going to link it below, that we had a really, really good chat on fertility. And it was actually cool getting like a lad's perspective, and he has like 2 kids as well, so he gives you loads of tips. Yeah, it was actually a really, really good episode, and we talked a good bit about male fertility there as well. So if you want to listen to that after this episode, you can jump on onto that. I'm going to leave the link below anyway. But sperm health, super important. It's actually even less than 3 months. This is what I actually find gas with lads. It's 70 days for sperm. Like, that's like 2 months. So they just said you have to be healthy for 70 days. Recently, I have started using an at-home sperm testing kit. So it's called X-Seed. It's on our online shop. I'll link it below as well. And I think this is actually a really, really good thing to do the 3 months before for the lads. Like, you know, most of them won't even take a supplement, or it'll be a struggle for them to take a supplement, let alone, do you think they're going to go to the doctor and do a sperm test and, like, you know, analysis in the GP's toilets. Like, you know, I think for most people that is actually a lot to ask, like, for just the general about healthy thinking, let's start trying for a family. Like, fair enough if you have fertility issues, but I do think this at-home testing kit is really good, even just to give them a little, like, kick up the bum if they need it, because they might see, oh, actually my volume's a little bit low, or the motility's not great, and, you know, you can leave them to it, and it's a really good app and this kind of thing. So just to say that now, because if you're listening and you're like, okay, I'm going to start my 3 months from right now and the male episode isn't coming out for a couple of weeks, that's also a really good little tool to add in. Okay, so we've talked about PMS, we've talked about progesterone. The other thing is tracking ovulation. And guys, this might sound so obvious, but I have a client, no joke, going for IVF, and they do not know when they've ovulated or when they're due to ovulate. Like, there's 6 days of the month you can get pregnant. So it's actually so hard. This is why it's so mad. Like, you know, again, going back to school, I feel like I was taught if you have sex, you will be pregnant, and that's it. Like, and die. Everyone knows the Mean Girls reference there. But it's really, really important to track your cycle. So I get my clients to do three things. Number one, track cervical mucus. Think of raw egg whites. It's quite stringy. It's clear. There's no colour off it. And this lovely fertile mucus is going to help draw the sperm up into the fallopian tubes and just going to help it get to where it's meant to be. And also, it makes things feel good. It's kind of lubricating everything. So number one, track your fertile mucus. And what I actually recommend doing is get a little period tracker app and put a note in your phone of when you see the mucus. And then, oh my God, that's actually such an awful word. Mucus alone doesn't sound too bad, but, like, fertile mucus is okay. Sorry, little side note. But so track in your phone when you see this. And then what I'd recommend doing is track when you think that you've ovulated. So good kind of indication of ovulation is you might get a slight cramp. You might be a little bit bloated one of the days. I know I feel it. Like, I know I've ovulated and I can maybe be a bit bloated for a couple of hours. My temperature is always through the roof. I'll always be sweating just one random night in bed, and I'm like, I'm definitely ovulating. And make a little note on your phone of when you're ovulating. So that'd be super important. So fertile mucus and ovulation. And normally what'll happen is when you see the fertile mucus, you're probably going to ovulate within the next, say, 24 to 48 hours. So it doesn't always have to be that day. It can sometimes be the few days afterwards. And then we know ovulation. And again, going back to those 6 days, the egg lives for 24 hours, but sperm lives for 5 days. So if you're actively trying to get pregnant, if you're a little bit ahead of me now, and, you know, you're ahead of the 3 months that we're talking about, you could, I always say, try and have sex every second day for in the run up to ovulation. So like day 9, day 11, day 13, day 14, you can even do it twice in a row around ovulation. And that normally seems to work a charm for a lot of my clients. But the second half, this is actually really, really interesting. And this is what I want you to start tracking as well for these kind of 3 months in the run-up to it. We don't talk as much about, like, luteal phase in the run-up to your period. So what this basically is, from the day you ovulate until the day you get your period. And this can only be maximum 14 days. It cannot be longer, because the egg that gets released, it dies basically and it forms thing called your corpus luteum. And what's so interesting about the corpus luteum is it's actually an organ, right? Like, our body, girls, we make a new organ every single month, and then it dies when we don't get pregnant, or it actually continues on to form a human. Like, we're amazing creatures. Like, the female body is just, like, on another level. It really is. No offense to the lads listening, but, like, it's just unbelievable. Like, you literally grow an organ every month. But the corpus luteum can only survive for 14 days. And that's the goal. We want it to be at least 14 days, where sometimes you can have a shorter luteal phase. So you might get your period within, say, like 6 or 7 days after ovulation, which would be like quite a short cycle. And what that basically means is you don't have enough progesterone. You're running out of progesterone too soon. And sometimes if you're not tracking ovulation and not tracking your luteal phase, it can be a little bit misleading if your cycles are a little bit irregular. So let's say, for argument's sake, you actually ovulate in day 20 and you only have an 8-day luteal phase and you get your period in day 28. And you're like, great, 28-day cycle. Not realizing, oh no, actually my ovulated late and my luteal phase was too short. So the goal is luteal phase should be at least minimum 10 days, if not like 14 days. That would be the goal. So just start tracking that now. It's good to know. And the easiest way to track it is to put in the day that you ovulated and put in the day you get your period and count the days between. Last but not least, before we move off from our cycle and knowing our period, is your blood flow. So it's kind of interesting that, like, obviously you hear a lot about heavy periods and, you know, we don't want heavy periods. That's a hormonal issue in itself. We've had an episode on that. But also you don't want your period to be too light either. And I would work with a lot of women who, like, only have maybe like a 1 day bleed. And, like, that's not ideal, because if you think of pregnancy, it's the egg that comes along and, like, nuzzles into that uterine wall. And, like, that's what, you know, that's making its new home there. So if your period is too thin, that can also be a sign of, or an increased risk, I should say, of miscarriage. So with light periods, it can be linked with low estrogen levels. So, like, you know, we would see low estrogen being linked with things like excess stress, low body weight, not having enough carbs in your diet, not having enough healthy fats, too much exercise, especially like quite high intensity exercise, low iron, or not eating enough, like, kind of like iron rich, like, nourishing foods, because your period is blood. So you want to make sure your period is blood, which is iron. So you want to make sure you have enough iron there. And a blood test should also help this as well, or kind of, you know, that's always my recommendation if any of my clients have light periods, is to get blood tests done. Okay, so we have talked about blood testing 3 months before. We want to get your periods really healthy, where you're literally like, is that my period? I didn't even realize it was coming. We want your other half to be a bit healthier as well. So you're all nice and prepared. The next thing is supplements. And you've probably heard me mention a good few times about supplements. Like, we shouldn't need them. Like, we're not designed to rely on supplements. But in this day and age, I'm like, thank fucking God we have them at the same time. Because the lives that we live, there's chronic stress everywhere. And, like, high cortisol levels deplete so many nutrients. Then we have things like environmental toxins. We have digestive issues, which is an issue with, like, detoxification of, like, toxins and chemicals. We have, you know, coming in contact with pollution, and our food's not as good. And, you know, you could do your best lifestyle wise and still be deficient in nutrients, which is a little bit sad these days, but it's just the way we're living our lives. So supplements can be really, really beneficial here. And I do recommend all of my clients take pregnancy supplements in the run up, the 3 months, and obviously when they're pregnant. So number one, a really, really good quality pregnancy multivitamin. Now, I'm not going to name names, but if you're able to buy your bananas and buy your pregnancy multivitamin at the same time, they're probably not great. Okay. So, you know, you want to get, I would kind of say, like, nutrition quality brands. Like, I'm not mad on, like, pharmacy brands, because they're grand. I literally use that word, they're grand. Okay. If you're in the position, your budget allows, you're able to spend a little bit more money on good quality supplements, get the good quality supplements. Again, it's 3 months before. And then hopefully you get pregnant and you can switch to, like, you know, a nice pregnancy multivitamin. So look for brands. There's two kind of terms and conditions that I kind of look out for. And it's the quality of the folate or folic acid in them and the quality of your B12 in them. And the ones that I like are ones that have a methyl before the word. So say, like, methyl folate or methyl B12. And what this means in, they're the highest quality of these supplements and they're the highest bioavailability. And what that means is your body can actually absorb them. So really, really important. A brand that I love, I like NHP, I like BioCare, I like NutriAdvance. ProSieve is also good. I sell NHP on my online shop and the code Spilling the Tea will get you 10% off. So that'll be like a nice little discount. I'll leave them below, and there's a male version as well. So pregnancy multivitamin, really, really important. Secondly is omega-3 fish oils. Our generation, we are just disasters at eating fish, honestly. Like, I would say, I ask actually my clients every day, do you eat mackerel? And I would say 1 in 50 say yes, they eat mackerel. So, like, mackerel is such a good omega-3 rich fish. Salmon used to be really good, but salmon is so overly farmed now that it's not as good as it used to be. Now, it's still good, but, like, especially for fertility, I'm like, try and buy organic salmon when you can. Wild salmon is like the A++ program, but, like, it's really hard to get wild salmon. So organic salmon in the run up to getting pregnant, sardines, trout, like, I can, like, acknowledge it is the real fishy fish. And, like, I love mackerel, but I actually will only cook mackerel on the days I have to wash my hair because, no, like, honestly, like, it stinks up your house, and I'll wear, like, clothes that I'm like, I have to wash because, and keep, like, the kitchen door closed and that kind of thing, because you do smell like mackerel afterwards. But these omegas, so what omega-3 does is, I always say, puts out fires. It's anti-inflammatory. It's good for any possible condition, anything at all that's red, that's sore, that's itchy, that's swollen, that's inflamed. So it can be anything from acne to period cramps to aches and pains to headaches to rashes to anything. Like, it's really, really important. So it's kind of one of those things that it just keeps you well. So in the run up to getting pregnant, omega-3 is really, really important as an anti-inflammatory supplement. And because, like most people, like I said, do not eat enough fish. You can get some omegas from things like flax seeds, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds and walnuts. But like, I always imagine if you can think about omega-3 like putting out a fire, like fish oils is like your hose, whereas like flax seeds and chia seeds are like a little sprinkler. Like, it's not going to do that much. And especially from a fertility perspective, you want to make sure that you're having good quality omegas. I have a lovely brand. I actually love the BioCare brand of omega-3 because they're not that expensive. Like, it's one thing I'm like, non-negotiable. You have to buy good omega-3 supplements. If you're buying cheap quality fish oils and they're meant to be anti-inflammatory and you're getting them from like polluted fish, obviously that's not ideal. So I love the BioCare brand. And the other thing is, it does not taste like fish. I promise you, there is nothing worse. I think I'm traumatized by like me back in like school. My mom would like be chasing me down the road, like on the way, like doing my leaving cert. And she'd be like, you have to take your fish oils for your brain. And whatever ones, I think they were the Udo's ones. I just remember sitting in class burping fish, like trauma. And I like fish. So imagine you're someone who absolutely hates it and you're sitting there in work burping fish. So I promise you, the omega-3 ones do not taste like fish. I've literally said to clients, you can bring these back if they're traumatizing you, but most people get on okay with them. And the next thing is vitamin D3. We're so bad in Ireland for getting vitamin D from the sun because we don't get any between October and March. And now these days, we're all obsessed with sun cream, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying don't wear your sun cream, but sun cream actually does block the absorption of vitamin D. So like when I'm on holidays or even like a nice sunny day in Ireland, I'll always give myself like 10 minutes with no sun cream on. Is that very controversial? Am I going to get cancelled now? But I just like, no, I'm not going to let it on my face because obviously like I need to look 17 forever. But for like my body, like my chest and my arms and stuff like that, I'll just try and get a little bit of vitamin D. But for pregnancy, super important as well, like for your immune system. It kind of puts out fires the same way as omega-3 does. So omega-3, your pregnancy multivitamin and your vitamin D are kind of like my three like non-negotiables. And these will carry on. These are the ones that you take when you're pregnant. You'll just kind of change your prenatal supplement to one that's for pregnancy instead. Other supplements that sometimes you'll hear about is magnesium. So I find magnesium brilliant for stress and, you know, we're all up the walls, let's face it. So you can take an extra magnesium supplement. Normally in multivitamins, like the pregnancy ones, there's normally not enough magnesium to correct a deficiency. So like another like 200 milligrams of magnesium a day should be fine if you feel like you're quite stressed or quite anxious or, you know, you work out a lot or that kind of thing. So you can take extra magnesium. And another one that's really popular for pregnancy is one called Coenzyme Q10. And basically what this is, it's an antioxidant. So antioxidants go around and it's like as if they're like little scavengers. They're going around killing any oxidative damage. And that word oxidative damage always gets linked to things like your egg quality and your sperm quality. So like smoking increases these free radicals. So imagine like you're smoking and all these like mad bad guys are running all over your house and you're trying to catch them all, if that makes sense. And this is something that Coenzyme Q10 will help you do. As we age, so as we go above 35 as females, our egg quality actually does start to decline. So any of my clients who are a little bit older, who are trying to get pregnant, I would always recommend they supplement with Coenzyme Q10 to give their eggs that extra little bit of energy, extra bit of antioxidants. If you're going for IVF or fertility treatments, 1,000,000% you need to take Coenzyme Q10. Like, it's just non-negotiable. It's so important for both egg and sperm quality. And like I always say, you're spending a fortune anyway. What's an extra couple of hundred euro on supplements? They are a little bit expensive. I'll link you to a brand that I really like below because it's important to get good quality ones. There's kind of different types of CoQ10. So I'll link you to one that is a little bit expensive, but it's well worth it if, again, your budget allows. If you're over 35, if you've been told you have like low AMH levels, which is your ovarian reserve, like your egg reserve, you could also take Coenzyme Q10 just to kind of give you that little bit of extra oomph in your step, I suppose. Next on the agenda. So if you were trying to get pregnant, act like you're pregnant. And what I mean by this, I remember I had a client a few weeks ago and she was mad into CrossFit, like loved. She was doing it 6 days a week. Like, CrossFit is so intense. I don't know anyone who actually enjoys it. Like, I think I did it once and I got a very drive home. I actually felt so sick, and I enjoy HIIT workouts. Like, I actually do really like high intensity workouts. But she was like, do you think that's too much? Like, she had already reduced it down a little bit. And I was like, well, if you found out tomorrow you were pregnant, would you do that workout? And she was like, oh God, no, definitely not. So that's a good question to ask yourself over the next couple of months. Like, if you found out you're pregnant, would you do XYZ? So we're kind of almost not tricking your body, because you're not tricking anything, but kind of telling your body, lads, it's grand. There's no stress. Like, everything is fine. We're not being chased by a tiger every day. Like, just trying to bring down those stress levels so your body feels safe. Like, you have to remember the reason you get pregnant is because your body wants you to reproduce. But if it kind of perceives like, oh my God, Ash is up the walls, like, she can barely look after herself, there's no way we can maintain a pregnancy. So I've mentioned exercise there. I think it's really, really important to start limiting how much really high intensity workouts you're doing. You know, if you're big into long distance running, and look, take this with a pinch of salt. Like I said, if you're like, no, this helps me so much, my periods are fine, I've never had any PMS, like, I'm grand, I don't have short cycles, that's you, that's brilliant. I'm kind of talking about here for the majority of women, right? So be mindful of your exercise. Maybe instead of your HIIT workout, go for yoga instead. I'm just like a recent yogi. And I like completely say that now with a pinch of salt. It's so funny. I got sent, you know, like the Gorge Flow State mats. Like, they're like stunning, like really, really lovely mats. I got sent them very, very kindly last year. But like, I think they're like 120 or 130 euros. So I bring that to my yoga class and people are probably like, oh my God, like, obviously she must be really good if she spent that much money on a yoga mat. Like, I'm like, no, I'm so bad. But for me, that was like a huge change. I loved my like 6 a.m. HIIT workouts, and I'm just trying to be like, okay, I'm just going to try and relax a little bit more. And I actually have started really enjoying it now. So do yoga or do Pilates, go for walks, do something a little bit less intense. You'll still feel good because you've exercised. You don't have to be barely able to drive home. Like, you know, we thrive on that sometimes. But I always say the reason you feel great after HIIT is because you didn't die and your body is delighted with you. So that's the first thing, exercise. Second thing, caffeine. My girls, we need to reduce the caffeine. So it's meant to be 200 milligrams is the cutoff point when you are pregnant. To be honest, I actually think that's quite high. Let me just look at this up here. So no more than 200 milligrams of caffeine daily. So a coffee is 95 milligrams. So you could have two coffees. A tea is 26 milligrams. So you could have what, like 6 cups of tea? No, 8 cups of tea. 4 squares of dark chocolate is 20 milligrams. So I think that's too much, to be honest, personally. Like, I think maybe have one coffee and one tea a day, max, and then go decaf. When you were pregnant in those first couple of weeks as well, like, if you can avoid caffeine, do. Think about how much of an impact coffee has on you. Like, I know for me personally, like, I've been wrecked. I'm like, fuck, I'll have a coffee. And I'm like, oh, okay, I can go now. And I'm literally like a little Duracell bunny legging around. So, you know, the first 5, you know, at the start, let's say you're 5-6 weeks pregnant, I think the fetus is like the size of a poppy seed or something, so tiny. And it takes so much energy to go from a poppy seed, even in the first 12 weeks where you can actually see the baby and, you know, or yeah, I suppose it is a baby then, and the heartbeat, and like, it's growing a heart, your body is growing a heart. So like, just be really mindful of that. Like, I think when you're pregnant, if you can prevent, just not have any coffee, I think that's a really, really good thing to do, because I think it really does impact the fetus. It goes through the placenta, it goes through the blood barrier. So, you know, we definitely know caffeine does actually impact the fetus, and it actually does increase risk of miscarriage as well. So just keep that in mind. But in the run up to it, try and reduce that down, even just for your progesterone levels. The next thing is blood sugar balancing. I've talked about this loads before. Not being hangry. Being hangry triggers stress. And again, when you're pregnant, it's kind of a really good habit to learn now, because morning sickness has been shown a lot of the time is actually linked with being hangry, that like, you're letting your blood sugars crash, your body goes into a little bit of panic mode, and then you feel sick after that. So if you get a really good habit of eating regular meals, okay, and then eating protein with all of your meals, that's going to help balance blood sugars, or the less fancy term is not being hangry. So best analogy, this will make so much sense to all of you, I've said it so many times, Irish mammy dinners. Protein source is always the center of the meal with Irish mammy dinners. Like, if your mom gave you, think about like your granny, and all she gave you was potatoes and carrots and a bit of gravy, you'd be like, granny, where is my dinner? This is a proper meal. Or imagine your mum just serves you a bowl of rice and nothing else, okay? But that same person might have not thought twice about eating Rice Krispies for breakfast. Same thing. It's a bowl of rice, right? Or toast and a banana. Toast and banana is like eating, again, carrots and broccoli. It's just, or potatoes and broccoli. It's just a carb, but a carb. So really, really important. Plan your meals the way Irish mammies plan dinner. So look at your protein source and then plan everything else around that. So protein sources are things like your meat, your fish, your eggs, your cheese, your yogurts, milk. And then you have things like plant-based proteins like nuts and seeds and chickpeas and lentils and your kidney beans and your falafels and your hummus. It doesn't even have to be like, you know, meat three times a day. Next time you're having your Weetabix in the morning, or, you know, your cornflakes or Rice Krispies, put in a sprinkle of flax seeds or pumpkin seeds, or have an egg with it on the side, or have a protein shake, or just be kind of more aware of, have a different breakfast, have eggs on toast, have beans on toast, have something else. So super, super important is your blood sugar balancing. Lastly, with the whole stress side of things, start saying no to things. Like, again, act like you're pregnant. If you hate that friend and she drains the life out of you every time you see her, or, you know, maybe start setting more boundaries in work, or, you know, relationships you need to mend, because you really need to protect yourself as well during the time. Like, there's nothing worse, or I can imagine there's nothing worse than being early pregnant and being stressed about a number of different things when you're like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. What the hell's going on? And obviously being worried about miscarriage and everything else. So just protect your energy, protect your space, start saying no to things you don't want to do, because it's super important as well. Next on our agenda is diet. And without going too specific on this, because this is obviously like what I do as a nutritional therapist, I look at, you know, people's individual diets and I recommend foods based on nutritional deficiencies, their lifestyle, their gut health, la la la, you know what I mean. But the diet that actually has so much research linked with fertility is actually the Mediterranean diet. And what the Mediterranean diet consumes of, it's basically like what we all know. It's loads of fruit, loads of veg, loads of whole grains, legumes, which are things like chickpeas and lentils and kidney beans and that kind of stuff. Nuts. Olive oil is amazing, your avocados, your healthy fats. It's lower in things like red meat, fish, especially omega-3, oily fish we chatted about earlier, and dairy products are a little bit lower on the list. So you could actually just look it up yourself, the Mediterranean diet, and start trying to incorporate more of these foods into your weekly dinners and into your weekly meals. This diet, the reason why it's so good is it's so high in antioxidants. So again, that word is like omega-3 on steroids. Like, antioxidants just put out the fire. They look for damage and they go fix it, or else they get rid of it. So we want as much antioxidants as possible. And really, they come from our brightly colored fruit and veg. So like, if you're someone who never really eats fruit, or like, you're not mad, and I always hear like, oh, I'm not mad on veg. I'm like, what do you mean you're not mad? Like, there's so many different types. You can't compare like broccoli and sweet potato. Like, they taste so different. So that frustrates me sometimes. I'm like, how can you not like anything? Like, so really do your best to try and get more nutrients into your diet. Smoothies can be really beneficial here as well. If you just hate things, just whack them all in a smoothie and just get them into you. But do look up the Mediterranean diet if you want a little bit more tips on what you should be doing. There's loads of recipes you could look up. But yeah, there's actually proper research done on this for fertility. So definitely try it. So hopefully by now you're not too overwhelmed. It's just nice little tips. We're going to learn about our cycle. We're going to add in our supplements. We're going to enjoy the process as we're doing it all. Last but not least is our environmental toxins. And this is something that I know for me personally, when I was studying nutrition years ago, we had this module. And I came home from college and I just was like, do you know what? We're fecked anyway. I was like, there's no point even trying. Because the environmental toxins, guys, they're absolutely everywhere, okay? We cannot escape them. There's no point getting too worked up about it, but there's certain things that we can do to help try reduce our toxic load, or how much these toxins are coming into our system. And again, when you're pregnant, the baby is so susceptible to these things. You want to make sure your tiny little fetus that's, you know, just barely forming is not coming in contact with chemicals as much as possible. So first thing, where these come from. So it's like skincare products, it's our food, and kind of our household products. First of all, I look at plastics. Now, I'm literally sitting here drinking a plastic bottle of water, right? So again, do your best with it. Don't be stressing out if you've one bottle of water, right? But imagine you had you're walking into Tesco every day on the way to work and getting like a big bottle of Volvic, right? Or any plastic bottle of water. And you're doing that every single day. And sometimes you actually just fill up the water at home and you're reusing the same bottle all the time. So get a glass bottle, or I actually have a big steel bottle I would use every day, because plastic can leach out of the water, or the plastic can leach into your system. And it can mimic your hormones and it can cause a little bit of havoc, and it's something that we do not want. So heating plastic's actually one of the worst things. So the other thing that freaks me out as well, when I see clients who, they'll be on like a Zoom call to me and their bottle of water is sitting on their desk and the sun is shining in, and I'm literally like, can you just move your water there for me? And they all think I'm mental. I'm like, no, I'll explain to you. And they're like, oh my God, I never realized that. Or I always think, like, if I'm on holidays, like sunbathing, I know something's not great in itself, but sure, look. And I'll always have like my bottle of water like under the sunbed or like in my bag. I'm a freak about like water being in the sun. So that's one little thing. And the other place is that you're going to heat up plastic and not realize it. It's things like soup, or like people are all mad about the like ready-made like fit meals and stuff, which are great, super handy, a little bit low in veg, but you know, we'll let it slide. But put it into a bowl, or like put your soup into, or your dinner in a plate, or your food, your soup in a bowl. Don't be heating up your the plastic in the microwave. The other thing is your utensils that you're cooking with. Teflon, I mean, Dan actually mentioned this in the last one, like the non-stick pans in themselves like aren't amazing, but like again, I don't expect people to come home and bin everything, right? And this thing, going back to our parents, they did not have non-stick pans. Like, I remember my mom smoking up the kitchen because, like, the iron pan had literally, like, you know what I mean? Like, the food is burnt and stuff like this. So, you know, things have really changed. Kind of cooking, which seems more convenient. Guys, air fryers, like, I refuse to even acknowledge this, but air fryers in itself, like, they're non-stick. So I now put all my food in like parchment paper instead of like putting it on the air fryer, because that in itself is plastic. So what we could do here is your utensils. Don't be worrying about non-stick. Don't be getting too stressed. But I had an aha moment a while ago, because here's me with my plastic spatula stirring my hot curry. And I'm like, oh my God, that's plastic. And not only is it plastic, it's heated plastic making my curry. So all of my utensils now, I have like wooden utensils, or I have silicone utensils. So little things like that. They're easy peasy. They're on Amazon for what, like €15. So easy peasy, your silicone utensils, get yourself a glass lunchbox and try and get rid of any of the like plastic bottles. So that's the first little thing. Second thing then, in terms of other kind of household products, one random one people would never think of is actually like tin or like aluminium. These are like heavy metals. So try and avoid like using tin foil where you can. So there, like I said, I use parchment paper in the air fryer. I don't use tin foil in the air fryer. The other thing that we switched to recently was, well, I say recently, like 2 or 3 years ago, instead of buying like tinned tomatoes, buy the carton of tomatoes. Like they're right beside you in the supermarket. But obviously the tin is aluminium. Like that's, again, it's a metal. So we want to just reduce our toxic load. So get your carton tomatoes instead. Cleaning products. Recently, I bought eco-friendly dishwashing tablets, because honestly, there was sometimes I'd be eating, especially something like if we put like the frying pan in the dishwasher and I'd be making eggs the next day. Sorry, I keep coughing here. My voice is very dry today. I'd be eating my eggs and I'm like, this actually tastes like soap. Like I could taste the dishwashing tablets on some of my food. So we got eco-friendly ones. They're a little bit more expensive, but I think I bought like a box of 90 of them for like €30. Like they're going to last forever. So grand, we have that. Cleaning products for like the kitchen counters, non-bio washing powder, or be careful of things like softener in your like washing machine as well. Like all those things have chemicals in them. So again, just slowly but surely reducing your toxic load. In terms of food then, there's times that actually there can be chemicals or kind of heavy metals in food. The biggest one is actually your fish, okay? So be really, really careful of your tuna can be quite high in mercury, whereas your things like salmon isn't as bad, your prawns aren't as bad for mercury. So just be careful of eating loads of tuna. I know some people are obsessed with it, and I have clients like, yeah, I have tuna every single day. And I'm like, oh my God, the mercury. So just be really, really aware. Like tinned salmon might be a better option. There's tins. You can't win them all, but it's just being more aware of it. Wash your fruit and veg. Like most skins, fruit and veg are going to be sprayed with certain things. They are chemicals. They're killing bugs. Wash it into your own gut health. We have our own gut bacteria. And their whole job is to kill bacteria. So make sure you're washing your fruit and your veg. Where possible, organic. Again, guys, I know it's so expensive. And again, whatever your budget allows, like, this is what you need to do. It works for you guys. But try and buy organic where possible. Because obviously that means there is going to be less chemicals in it. And last but not least, I would look at my products, like what I'm using on my skin. So you guys know I love Tan Organic. If you don't know, I was their brand ambassador for, oh my God, nearly like 2 years. And then they sponsored a good few episodes last season of the podcast. I literally have Tan Organic on now, even though my hands are a bit minging, so don't judge me. But I'm obsessed. It's completely natural in terms of there's no added chemicals. Like, obviously everything has to have chemicals. Like, even water is H2O, which is a chemical. But what I mean though is, like, it doesn't have added toxins or phthalates or fragrances that can really, really impact hormones. So I think anything you're leaving on your skin is super important. Whether it's tan, whether it's moisturizer, deodorant comes in here as well. So switch to a natural deodorant. Most of them have aluminium in them. That's why they work. So all these little things you can start doing, like try and reduce perfume, especially if you're actively trying to get pregnant. Don't be lading yourself in hairspray and perfume and dry shampoo and, you know, head to toe and tan. Like, it's so much chemicals. And imagine you just ovulated, the egg and the sperm are doing a little dance, having a little bit of fun. And all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, what is that smell? Why is there so much chemicals here? Like, you know, you just want to make sure that the environment is nice and happy for your baby to keep going. So that's it, which I know is loads, right? But I hope you guys got some good little tips from this. I'll do another episode even on like pregnancy and kind of like what you should expect or what you should be doing along that side. Again, I don't want to be freaking people out. Like, just do your best. I remember, like, even me reading a couple of months ago, I saw someone online post about like the exercises you have to do like in your 2 week window, which is your 2 week window is the time between like ovulation and when you find out you're actually pregnant. And even that, I'm like, fair enough. Like, we have so much knowledge now, but like, girls, we're not made of glass. Like, we are designed to do this. Like I said, we grow an organ every single month. So like, imagine you just came, actually I just come back from doing a HIIT workout, right? In like the gym, loved it. I was fueled. I wasn't like mad stressed and I was running to the gym. And I was like, imagine I was waiting to find out if I was pregnant and I read that, I'd be like, oh my God. And then imagine you didn't get pregnant, or imagine you had a miscarriage. You'd be like, oh my God, it was the HIIT workout. And you know, this kind of thing. So just be careful of where you get your information and just take everything with a pinch of salt. Do your best. Do what feels good. Listen to your body and also enjoy the process. Because like I said, it's a very, very exciting time. And for most people, like, give yourself a couple of months. I think the last thing I'll say is we're such planners, like our generation, myself included. I'm like, okay, I'll order takeaway. I'll be here in 45 minutes. I'm going to have a shower. When I get out, it'll be here. And it's like, oh, great. Here's my takeaway. And I think that's always a good analogy because we're such instant. Or like, you can order something on Amazon. It's here tomorrow. And we're like, oh yeah, that's great. And, you know, so I have clients who are like, okay, I'm going to come off the pill now in April and I got pregnant in June, and then by like next summer then we can do that trip together with like all the babies. And I'm like, hold on a minute, I'm like, you might not even be pregnant by next year. So just give yourself that time and give yourself that space. It doesn't always work that quickly. I would always say, like, if you're on birth control, come off birth control, I'd say 12 months if you can kind of do that. If that completely freaks you out, at least 6 months. Like, even 6 months before you start trying, that's only 3 months of your body not having any birth control, like post-pill, if that makes sense. So when you come off the pill, this first 3 months, your eggs have been influenced by the pill because it takes 3 months to grow and you've been on the birth control. And then 3 months post-pill then, is that's when, you know, things are actually starting to work. So just give yourself a little bit of time in that. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I have a brilliant episode next week with our hormone nutritionist, Katrina. So we actually recorded this back in January, and I just been kind of putting off like doing a fertility kind of month. So I'm actually, this whole month actually coming up now is fertility. So I'm sorry if this doesn't interest you, but I kind of think it's a good thing for people, like anyone, to kind of be aware of. But next week, Katrina shares her story with us. Guys, when I say we bawled, I was sobbing during her episode. I actually haven't re-listened to it. I'm going to listen to it next week when I release it. But just to give you like a really, really quick background, Katrina had I think it was nearly 8 miscarriages. Now she finally has her beautiful little boy now, but she kind of talked through the process. I'm sure some of you as my clients have gone to see Katrina. Like, she is our hormone nutritionist who works with us in the clinic. She's absolutely brilliant. Hello, Katrina, if you're listening. But yeah, she was so kind to share her story, and like, I know it's going to help so many people. Like, even I was just like, how did you keep going with this? Like, even just to give someone that encouragement and, you know, oh, I can't wait for you to listen to it next week. So that'll be next week. And we have also, I'm going to do a topic on egg freezing. And I have another wonderful client of mine coming in to record and talking about like hypothalamic menorrhea. So she no periods for a couple of years. And she also has a gorgeous little baby. So like another really like feel good story. So we're going to do loads of different fertility topics in the month of April. And also a topic for the lads that you can send on. I'll keep it super short and sweet in that one, like 20 minutes. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will chat to you all next week, and I'll leave all the links that I talked about below at the end of the episode. Okay, chat to you soon. Bye.